This is your host, Sarah Nayani. And on today's episode, I am so excited because I got to talk with Ariel Zamora from Small Yard Flowers, who's kind of a local hero. She's the queen of roses, we might say. She just grows gorgeous, beautiful flowers. And I got to talk to her about, you know, her business, how it's shifted over time, the things that she's interested and inspired by. We talked about her growing space and the types of flowers that she grows. I asked a lot of questions about roses and a little bit about her flower designs, which are so beautiful. And I even was organized enough, sometimes I'm organized, to ask for listener questions before I interviewed her. And so if you submitted listener questions, listen till the end of the convo, and I think I may have slipped some of yours in. But before we get to that interview, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friend Amy Barine from Capital Blooms. She wrote a book, and it's called Flower Gardening for Beginners, A Guide to Growing and Maintaining a Cut Flower Garden. And you can pre-order it now on Amazon if you're a new flower grower or someone who just wants to learn a lot. I mean, I've been growing flowers for a while, and I was reading her book this weekend and just was like, oh, that's a really good point, or I didn't think of that, or just the way she breaks things down. It's just simple, organized, wonderful, like clear to understand. And sometimes I feel like these concepts, like it's just like, oh, each flower needs a very particular different thing. And just the way that she structured it just made a lot of sense in my mind. So I highly recommend her book. And you can pre-order it if you'd like to. I'm going to try to have her on later this season. So hopefully we'll get a chance. And if not, we'll do it next season. She's very busy now, just having written a book. So a few updates from Seattle. It is really, really nice out lately. A lot more sunshine, and just really been loving the warmer weather. And the plants have too. They're definitely taking off, at least the summer variety. So right now, some of the highlights are I'm loving my sweet pea tunnel. The sweet peas are about 8 feet now, so they're taller than me, and I keep tying them down, and then they'll grow like almost a foot a week or maybe more on some of these plants, because like I usually tie them down every Saturday or Sunday, and then by the next week, they're like really ready to get tied down again. So getting some really good stem lengths off the ones that are in the backyard. And if you listen to the episode with Marin from Farmhouse Flower Farm, she was saying that if you can have sweet peas in an area where they don't get direct sunlight all day, it can actually improve the health of the plants and extend their season. And so I'm really hoping that the location that I have right now, where my sweet peas get mostly morning shade and then some afternoon sun, I'm hoping that that will mean that the sweet peas on the tunnel will last a lot longer into the season than my other ones that I have on the driveway that are kind of looking like they're going to be ready to start wrapping up soon. And then dahlias have started blooming. I got my first Cozy Town Bounty was my first bloom. And then Cozy Town Gale was my second one. So I have like a little patch in the driveway area, the raised beds there. That's like my Cozy Town collection. And those are doing really well. I think it's nice and hot in the driveway. So those were the first ones to bloom. And then I've got some down on the sidewalk that are setting buds. I've had a lot of aphid pressure on my dahlias and a lot of my plants this year. And I went around the other day, and one of the culprits, I think, is all of the nasturtiums that I planted. They're really attracted to nasturtiums. And back on the very first episode of Flower Friends, I was talking about this with Hillary Dahl, because she was saying that her and her husband are like, which comes first, the nasturtiums or the aphids? And so she was basically saying that she thinks the nasturtiums act to like distract the aphids from the other plants. And her husband, Colin, was thinking that the aphid or the nasturtiums attract the aphids. So I don't know which is which this season, but I've been finding a lot of aphids on my nasturtium leaves and just pulling out the ones that have a lot underneath. And kind of a telltale sign that I've been finding is if the nasturtium leaf is pretty crinkled, I'll just pull it out. And so I only have a couple nasturtiums that have started flowering. Most of them are just in the leaf stage. So it's been pretty easy to find the aphids and pick them out. But on the dahlias, I've been getting a ton of aphids up on the stem. And before they flower, I've just been going with a little tiny piece of paper towel that I've split into like 5 different or 10 different pieces. And I'm just kind of wiping aphids off to make sure that when the flower opens, they're not getting into those flowers. So that's basically been my aphid protection, is because I'm not using any chemicals, I'm not using pesticides, nothing like that. So basically, I'm waiting for each dahlia to grow and the aphids kind of move up towards the flower so I can easily see them, and then I just wipe them off. So it's a lot of intensive checking on my plants, but I'm hoping if I can kill enough at the beginning of the season that they won't be as big of a problem throughout the season. But I was curious if other people have been seeing a crazy amount of aphids this year as well. So head on over to the Flower Friends Instagram if you have, and drop me a message, because I'd like to hear if you're seeing that too. And then some other things I just had, I planted some lilies last fall for the first time. It was the first time I'd grown them. I had a few really cool varieties that were super small open a couple weeks ago. And then when I got back home today, I saw that these deep red lilies that I have just started opening. I've got a bunch of like foxgloves, snapdragons, I've got bells of Ireland, all sorts of things growing right now. It's really popping off around here, so I'm very happy about that. And one thing I wanted to mention is I've noticed a lot of my customers requesting bright colors, and I'm really feeling that vibe too this summer. I didn't fully plan for that when I was planning out all of my seeds and everything. I definitely have a ton of bright colors going on in what I'm growing in my garden, but I also included a lot of whites and pastels because traditionally people love those for like weddings and different events. But I've been finding that my like weekly subscription customers really want bright colors. So I've been using a lot of my brights for that, and then I buy in flowers from other local growers like my friend Margaret at Ballard Urban Flowers, and I recently bought some in from Kristen at Neighborhood Flower Co., and just other local growers that have reached out throughout the season. So I've just been requesting a lot of bright lately. I think there's enough crazy, sad, horrible things going on in the world that like flowers are there to bring us joy, and I think people are just really loving the brights this season. One thing that I worked on Friday was to add a layer of mulch on most of my beds, especially the dahlias and then the perennial beds, because I want to use less water this season. So I tried to add a thick layer of mulch on top of, you know, some compost and a little bit of chicken manure to provide more nutrients, and then I put some mulch right on top of that. And I'm hoping that I'll have to water less and that the plants will be a lot happier, kind of like tucked into their beds. So yeah, that's kind of what's going on around here. I'd say in summary, I'm happy and the plants are loving that it's warm finally. Finally getting some blooms, yay. Seeing a lot of aphids this year and trying to get them before they get my flowers. Seeing customers requesting bright colors and hitting those garden beds with mulch. And I wanted to add something in right here, which is just to say that I think on Instagram and definitely on the podcast, I'm guilty of this too, but I think we tend to share our successes more than our failures. And I just wanted to say that it was a particularly hard spring for me. I had a lot of personal issues going on, but also just garden issues. I had a lot of failures, and I want to put that out there because I don't want to just share successes here. I want to say that, you know, the rain really got me down, the bad weather, and it just made me feel like maybe I'm not good at gardening anymore. Maybe I am choosing the wrong path in life. What have I done? And, you know, it's so easy when like you work by yourself, and I have a part-time job too, but it's like, it's easy to get in your head and have like a couple failures lead to what am I doing and what is life? And so I just wanted to share that because I had a couple like back-to-back failures where I had a round of zinnias that I had put out that just died. It was too cold and rainy. I put dahlias out and they were all looking horrible. And like I invested so much in them, and the cold weather, they just were really not looking happy this spring. And then I tested, and I had I had 8 in total that tested positive for tomato spotted wilt virus. I got the test strips and from my friend Margaret, and then I ended up ordering more and testing more of my plants. But in addition to that, I had some other ones that were showing weird signs before I got the test, just very strange stripes on their leaves or circles on their leaves, and I ended up pulling those. So that shifted a lot of my summer plans, and it really hit at a time when I was having, you know, a couple things going on in the garden that weren't going well, or just feeling like I couldn't stay on top of everything at the same time, or I would plan to do something like pinch the dahlias and then it would be rain in the forecast for 5 days. So everything I felt like just kept getting shifted. And I think I've been taking a little more on than I should be and not like, you know, setting time aside for the garden. And so then I feel really like behind when I get out there and I feel really defeated. And so I just wanted to share that in case that helps you at all. And just also that there's been a lot going on in the world that's been really hard. And I just hope everyone that's listening that this podcast can just bring a little bit of joy, or your other flower friends, or your flowers or your garden itself. And just wanted to tell you that I'm sending a lot of love and that it's not all roses and rainbows around here, and that I've been struggling a lot too. So if I present as like, oh, everything's going great, that's not ever the case. And I just wanted to say that out loud. Okay, so let's switch gears and get over to this great interview. But before we do that, your flower friends, flower fact of the week. And I'm going to ask this question. It's a little complicated, so I'm going to define the question. But which state has the top floriculture sales in the United States? Now, floriculture here, I'm defining pretty broadly. So it's sales of fresh cut flowers, potted flowering plants, foliage plants, annual bedding and garden plants, herbaceous perennials, cut cultivated florist greens, and unfinished floriculture material. So that's retail and wholesale sales combined. So which state do you think has the highest sales of all of that combined? We'll give you the top states right at the end of the interview. So let's get over to talk to Ariel. All right. Well, today I am so happy to welcome Ariel Zamora from Small Yard Flowers. Can you tell me a little bit about your business and where it's located?
Yeah, I'm in St. John's neighborhood of Portland, you know, the farthest north tip of Portland you can go. So that's part of it. I have most of it here in St. John's, but I have a little farm plot in deep southeast way across town. So, oh, and also I have a little new rose plot in Park Rose. So there's three areas.
So do you end up driving around a lot to tend to all your plants?
Yes, there is sadly a lot of driving, but I'm working on, you know, cutting one of the, you know, the southeast plot out after this year. So there'll be one less place to go.
And you grow a lot at your house, right?
I do. I grow in my front yard and backyard, and then my neighbors down the street let me use their backyard. So amazingly, with the small amount of space we have, we grow a lot of stuff. Yeah.
And what items and services do you offer?
Mainly, especially this year, we grow wholesale cuts for other florists and shops. I also do like weekly restaurant accounts. I do delivery floral arrangements off my website. And I also do a la carte weddings this year. So yeah. That's kind of a lot.
Yeah, that
over the board there.
So what is the restaurant? Is it like a subscription and basically you bring new flowers to them each week or something?
Yeah. So we just like once a week we go and we do like bud vases for the tables or like big arrangements for their bar tops, things like that. And we use flowers that hopefully last almost a week. So yeah. So, I mean, I've had a few restaurant accounts from, you know, for several years, cause that's how I started my business, thinking I was just going to do restaurants, but
wow,
it definitely morphed out of that. So,
well, it seems like just from following along through your Instagram, this is the first time today that we've gotten to meet, but, It seems like you made a pretty intentional shift to move from maybe doing a ton of events to trying to focus more on growing this year. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, definitely. After last year, which was still like a pretty heavy COVID year, it was, well, mostly the, like last year was when everybody from 2020 moved their weddings to last year. So like last year was like very bonkers. I had like 35 plus weddings last year.
Whoa.
I was really, really burnt out. By the time August came around, I just wanted to throw a little tantrum and cry.
But, yeah.
And it was hot and it was, you know, juggling weddings with full-time farm work is really hard. And so this year I was like, what can I do to make it, you know, less crazy? So I've decided to cut back on the full service weddings and just offer a la carte options through my website that people can just order and come pick up when the time comes.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a little bit better balance for you, because were you doing big installations before?
Yeah, I was doing full service stuff where it takes a full day just to, you know, you go out there, you set it up, you go back, you flip it, you go back, you take it all away. And, you know, after that's all done, it's been like four full days of like production and all that kind of stuff. And it's just too much to do on top of everything else.
And so you mentioned that the restaurants was kind of the first thing you thought you were going to do. Did you kind of come in on the growing side or the designing side? How did you kind of start your small yard flowers?
It was kind of both. So like 7 years ago, my partners started a restaurant Northwest Portland. And I had always been a gardener. Like above all else, I'm a gardener for life. That's where my passion lies. But I thought, oh, I could grow some flowers and do weekly flowers for my partner's restaurant. And then I thought, oh, what if I could turn this into a business?
Yeah.
And do restaurant flowers. So I got a few other restaurants, but not many. And then people started asking about weddings. And I was like, oh, sure, I can do weddings, even though I knew nothing about weddings. Zero things. And I did a few friends' weddings for free. I did, you know, friends of friends. I mean, I don't even have images of those weddings because I'm sure it would not. It's embarrassing. You know, everyone starts somewhere.
Oh, yeah. And it might just, your style might have evolved over time.
Oh, absolutely. And so it started that way. And all of a sudden I became a wedding florist. And then I was like, well, I'm going to grow more flowers because I love to grow. Like, why not? So I just kind of started teaching myself flower farming over a few years and just growing in my yard. And then it just kind of morphed into like a larger scale thing. I've met a lot of awesome flower farmers through the past several years who, you know, changed my life. And also I've learned a lot from. And yeah, now this is where I'm at.
That's awesome. And so how has like making that shift to focus a little more on growing, do you feel like that's provided some balance this year? Or, you know, how are you feeling about how you split the balance between growing and designing?
I think it's definitely feeling so much better this year because I love designing for weddings, but I feel like I feel a little creatively stuck. And what I really love is doing like floral still lives in my garage and having my friend Teresa come and photograph them and working on a calendar or doing more like art-based floral design opposed to event-based. So this year I have much more time to play with my flowers and instead of the whole production side of things. So it feels much better because last year I don't think I had much time to play.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're focusing on.
Good. And then can you tell me a little bit about local flowers and what that means to you and your business?
Yeah. Ever since the beginning, I was pretty, pretty into the idea of like locality and sustainability within the flower world. I didn't know much when I started. I didn't realize the flower industry was so big and so destructive. But I knew that there was something special about growing organically and keeping things local. And now it, like more than ever, I think it's really important to keep in mind like how buying local flowers can be so special and so important for the world. Because when you really dive into like the flower trade, it's really kind of scary.
Yeah.
and how, you know, just like the footprint of the flower world is very crazy. And I've always thought like how weird it is that we think flowers are so beautiful and now they heal us and all these things, but how is that possible when they are, how can they heal you and bring beauty into the world when they are destroying so many things, right? Like the trash that comes from all the plastic, from all your wrapped flowers that are shipped in from Ecuador and all the chemicals used to grow them. And when the workers can't even like breathe or be healthy or be paid fairly, it just seems like a contradiction. So I think that if we're really going to talk about beautiful flowers, we have to talk about local organic flowers
and the sourcing of those flowers, not just how they appear or look. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also you mentioned the waste, which I think a lot of people, you know, they look at what's in front of them, but they're not necessarily thinking about how they got there and all the steps along the way. So have you found that your customers and then designers that you work with or sell flowers to can really tell the difference or get super excited about varieties you might have or things like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just from like when I do deliver like floral arrangements for delivery off my website, people always message me after they get them. They go, "Wow, I've never seen flowers like these before," or "Oh, they smell so good." I'm like, because you've never seen that kind of rose, you know, that garden rose, or, you know, you might be just used to all those weird out of season flowers at new seasons, you know?
Yeah.
Because people think, "Oh, I bought flowers from Trader Joe's or New Seasons. They're great. They're local." I'm like, they're not at all. Like, they're pumped full of pesticides and all kinds of stuff. They're not. So, you know.
Yeah. And like preservatives so they can last longer to get here. And it can be dangerous, not just for the people growing them too, but the people in their homes don't even realize sometimes. So.
Oh, totally. And it's like, you don't want to compost that, like, you know, like if you have like a garden compost or if you have like animals and stuff, it's important that you know whether your flowers are grown in a mindful way so that you can compost them. Because I have ducks in my backyard and they go through the compost. So I won't put anything in my compost that I know that they can't eat.
Are the ducks just, are they like pets, farm pets, or are they just, they come visit?
They're like organic slug control is why I got them years ago, because, you know, slugs are horrible and we all hate slugs. But now they're awesome. They're so cute.
Did you name them?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've had several ducks over the last several years. We have a raccoon situation sometimes, sadly.
The raccoons get to them.
But right now I have two ducks. One is Billie Holiday and one is Louis Armstrong.
A match made in heaven.
Oh, they're so cute. They're so cute. I love them.
And while we're on pets, you have a bunny as well, right? Some people were asking about your bunny.
I have two bunnies.
Oh.
I have two bunnies. Right now they live on separate floors because they haven't been introduced to each other yet, but I rescued them both from my friend's farm, Leah at Indigo Gardens. She has a big, beautiful backyard farm, and for some reason, all the you know, domestic bunnies that have been dumped or lost find their way to her yard. So we rescued them and I ended up keeping them. And so I have two amazing house bunnies.
Wow. There's like a bunny communication. Like, this is the place to go if you,
this is where all the food is. This is where all the flowers are. Yeah. They're so cute. And then I have two cats too. So.
Oh, wow. Do they get along with the bunnies, or was that?
Oh, they love the bunnies.
Good. Yeah. That could go either way.
Yeah. I'm constantly trying to bring home more animals.
Yes.
I want a pig, a horse, a goat.
Oh, that would be amazing.
But, you know, I live in the city. I don't think
I can. Well, that was one of the listener questions we got was how big your growing space is in total and you know, what you're able to produce seasonally in a small space.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I've tried to like sit down and like figure out my acreage on paper. But you know, it's just a normal city lot. I have a normal size backyard and front yard. I do have a somewhat larger parking strip than most people. So I grow a lot of stuff on there. But with my front yard and my neighbor's backyard, I'm able to, I have like 200 rose bushes just here.
Wow.
Which is kind of like, it seems like a lot, but the way I grow is very like, we call it cramscaping.
Okay, love it.
We really cram things in. Like my roses have a 18-inch spacing, which is very, very tight, but doable, especially if you're growing specific roses like hybrid teas and floribundas and things like that. But and then like I do in my backyard, I have a greenhouse that I have over the winter. So like this last winter, I forced, you know, 5,000 tulip bulbs in there.
Wow.
I grew another 5,000 tulip bulbs in crates in my driveway. So we couldn't even park in my driveway. So I'm just like putting things in every single spot that I can. I've hit maximum capacity. I keep bringing more plants home, but I cannot fit them. It's a problem. It's an addiction. But then out in Southeast, it's about a third of an acre, I think, a quarter to a third of an acre, which allowed me a lot more space to grow like all my dahlias and the zinnias and the other like perennials and annuals in larger quantities than I could here.
So were you growing everything at home for a while and then you were able to shift what you were growing at that space?
Okay. I grew everything here. And for several years, my neighbors right next to me let me put raised beds in their front yard. I had 8 raised beds that I grew dahlias in and tulips. And then when they took their yard back, I was like, well, where am I going to grow things? So that's when I got the plot in Southeast because I wanted to expand.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that happened. And then this last winter, I had a friend who lives in Park Rose say that I could grow in their backyard. So, and they have a pretty big backyard. So I was able to put another 200 roses back there.
Oh my gosh. I bet they love it too. They get beautiful fragrance and of you, or they will once they get more established maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did you come across the plot that you got in Southeast? How did you like arrange that with whoever you're leasing it from?
Well, my best friend and farm partner, Leah of Indigo Gardens, we run a wholesale flower business called Wonderkin together.
Okay.
Over the pandemic, I started working with her because I wanted some extra money. So I started doing harvest work, and she has her farm in Southeast also aside from her own backyard farm. She has 2 locations. So she farms mostly in the Southeast plot. And there was an extra little plot above hers that she said that I should farm. And then that's how I got hold of that. So we farm right next to each other, which is awesome.
That is really awesome. I've been talking to a couple growers like in urban settings that are doing something similar. And I think that's a question that comes up a lot is like, I've maxed out my current space. How do I expand? So it's great to hear that there's options. And it seems like maybe teaming up with a friend might be a good way to, you know, access a bigger plot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Teaming up with a friend and just looking at what kind of land is for lease or, you know, just finding somebody with a giant backyard, front yard that you could do trade with or something. Yeah, there's ways around, you know, there's ways to get, you know, not everybody has the ability to go buy land in the country. Although we wish we did. I wish I could, but we can't. So it's like, well, we got to just do what we can here. And
Well, what does your seasonality look like at your space? Like, from when do you kind of start seeing blooms, and when in the spring, and then when do they kind of end in the fall?
yeah, so well, this year, since I did forest tulips, we got our first tulips in February.
Wow.
So then, which I think I'm a crazy person for extending the tulip season, because tulip season is a slog. It's
It's
very hard, right? Like, it
back-breaking work.
is, and it's already a month, you know. Usually, if you're just growing outside, you've got like April through the beginning of May. That's your tulip season. And you're like, you just work so hard for 4 weeks and then it's over. But with forcing them, I was like, okay, February through May. And that was, but it was great. It was great to have flowers in February. But if like in a normal year, if I'm not forcing tulips, our first flowers kind of arrive in early March. So that's like, well, now I'm thinking of all the January flowers. We've got like hellebore too, which is, it really starts then in January.
So what you're saying is it's fully year
It is a year-round thing, which is so, everyone goes, oh, you're a farmer, you have like the off season. I was like, I didn't really feel an off season at all. And if something's not, there's maybe a month like December when like you're not like actively farming every day, but you're doing admin work or you're planning your seed collection and all that stuff. So you really don't get any time off. You're just not making money.
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
you know, so, but like, so flowers really start coming out in like March when you got your daffodils and you've got, you know, other things in pop in. And then, you know, April comes and your tulips, everything else, and then roses come, which is like
Yay.
the best thing in the world. This year it's been so wet and cold, they were like 2 to 3 weeks behind, so we
Wow.
didn't have any like May roses. We had like June roses. And then we move into like, you know, dahlias and zinnias. Once it gets warmer, it's so cold still, like my zinnias are like 3 inches tall, which is weird. Yeah, this rain, this has been the wettest spring. And then yeah, then we move through summer, and then we go to the heat of summer where you got all your hot summer annuals, and then your fall stuff where you start like planting bulbs for spring again, and then like the whole cycle starts over.
Do you have a few favorites that you love for like ease of growing, or just to have, for what you design or work with?
I've been really trying to plant more perennials. So like, I know I'm like only 32, but I feel in my body like very much house farming might be unsustainable for me in the long run. So I'm like, what can I grow that is a little less work? So I was like, let's move more into perennials. So I've been kind of building my perennial collection. So like foxgloves, like super easy, you know, any other perennials, that come back every year, because annuals are a lot of work. You have to sow seed every year. You have to get your bed prepped. You have to plant them. You have to net them. You have to pull them out at the end of the year, and then you start over. So it's just a lot of work. So I've been finding a lot of comfort with perennials. But you know, it's kind of hard to choose something that's like really easy. There's really not, I mean, I guess there's certain things you can just throw seeds out in the ground and they grow and they're awesome, like cosmos or something. Those are great. But like even perennials take, like roses, they're perennials, but they are still so much work. They're spiky and they're really spiky, and it's, ugh, I love them though.
There's nothing like them. They're so beautiful.
Yeah, it definitely takes a special people to put up with roses for sure.
Especially that many.
Yeah.
So what do you look for when you're selecting roses? I know you have a lot of plants, and over time, have you kind of narrowed in on certain varieties or families that you like, or colors, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the wedding industry really dictates what we grow as farmers, because we want to grow the really good colors that people are going to order. But for me, like, yeah, I'll grow the really popular roses like Distant Drums and Coco Loco, Honey Dijon. They're beautiful. But my eye is usually really drawn towards like apricots and really funky colors in the rose world. Like I grow this rose called Neil Diamond, and he's pink and white stripes. And I really, really love that. I love anything that's going to look great in like a Dutch still life floral arrangement, something that's like really eye-catching. We also think a lot about like vase life. If a rose has a good vase life for selling, you know, because if it only lasts like 3 or 4 days, or if it droops really soon, I don't want to spend a lot of space growing that rose. So I try to find the roses that can hold up a little better. I also look at the shape of blooms. Like I'm really attracted to cupped roses. I really like that shape. And yeah, there's a lot of things I think about when I'm choosing roses. For some reason though, I'm really attracted to like apricots and peaches.
Yeah.
Those things, which are really beautiful in the garden.
Absolutely. And so when you're buying roses, are you typically buying like 5 of the same kind or 10 of the same kind? Or do you love to just have like a huge array of different varieties of roses?
Well, if I'm planting a variety to sell as a cut rose, I want at least like 30 of them.
Okay.
If it's for my own collection in my own garden, like 1 or 2 to 5. Like Jude the Obscure is one of my favorites, and I have maybe only 5 plants, but it's a giant rose. You only need 5. But like Distant Drums, I have like 40.
Okay.
Just depends. And then I have some really special specimens that are like, I only have 1 plant, and they're just in the garden part of my yard. And those are really special to me. And I don't cut them that often. I cut them for myself. Or yeah. The very lucky florist who comes along and sees it and wants it. And I cut it
for them. You're my fave. So you get these special ones.
Yeah. If you're nice to me, I'll give you special things.
And so how long are you usually waiting from when you plant a rose to really cut from it for cut flower production? How long does that take usually?
Well, when you plant your bare root rose, which is around like February, March, you'll get flowers the first year. People say not to harvest from your roses the first year. I can't keep myself from doing that. I do harvest a little bit. You know, you just don't want to cut really hard on your first year rose because it's putting a lot of energy into root growth. And if you keep cutting on it, it's going to take that energy away from its roots and put it into putting off new growth.
Okay.
So you don't want to cut so hard. And I mean, I've cut on all my first year roses and so far they're okay. Like my roses are now like 4 years old and they're doing great, but I never cut crazy hard on them. But your second year, you're going to get a really great harvest off your roses, depending on whether you planted an own root rose or a grafted rose. Those affect the strength or like how many roses you'll get the following year.
And so, well, maybe to get nerdy for a second, I've seen those terms before, but I'm not sure I know exactly what they mean. Is that something that you could define?
I'm not sure. Like most of the roses you're going to buy, especially like if you're going to like the Portland nursery or you're buying offline, a lot of them are grafted roses, meaning that the variety of rose you bought has been grafted to a strong rootstock of some variety of rose that the growers have chosen that they know is super like hardy and strong. So they've grafted your variety to that different root, meaning like, and then once you plant it, it's going to be really strong the next year. It's going to be super, super great. And that's why they tell you to bury your rose over the grafted joint.
Okay.
Because if you don't bury your rose, then that original rootstock could send out like rose stems, like suckers, they call them like suckers of the original rose that you don't want. So I don't know if you've ever seen a rose in someone's yard and it's one color, and then they've got this weird rose coming out the side that's a different color, that's because the grafted, the like the rootstock has shot out a sucker in it.
Oh my gosh. I always thought it was just like two plants really close to each other or something. I had no idea. And I feel like I've seen trees like that too, where they're grafted two different things on one tree. I just, I didn't realize what that meant with roses.
They graft trees. Yeah. Like you can get a grafted tree that's a pear and a apple and like, you know, on the same tree.
So wild.
And then alternatively, there's own root rose, meaning that the grower has taken a cutting from the mother plant and has rooted it and turned it into a rose, and its rootstock is the same as the rose on top. And that in the long run will give you a really beautiful, long-lasting rose. It just takes a little more time for it to get going. So like I have a few varieties that are grown with their own root. And this is their fourth year, and they're finally really producing good stems.
Wow, that's a long, long haul to wait.
It kind of is, yeah. So, I mean, but that's just those varieties. There might be some other own root varieties that are strong right off the bat, but that's the difference between grafted and own root roses.
Okay, and so mostly you're probably looking for grafted because you're going to get flowers sooner.
Well, no, because yes, grafted's great, but I know that like own root roses are going to be even stronger in the long run. And they can send out, because they're on their own root, like they'll send out like all these amazing basil shoots from the bottom. And also a lot of really interesting varieties and really hard to find varieties only come on their own root. So you just, how you got to do it. Yeah.
Good to know. Wow. So it's sort of like short-term gain, but long-term if you want a rose for a really long time. And roses can live a really long time, right?
Oh, like 100+ years for sure. And that's why your own root rose is going to probably outlast your grafted rose.
Okay.
At least that's what I read and what I believe.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I have like 6 or 8 roses and I've just sort of been like trial by fire learning about them and trying to pick up a little bit over time. I just select varieties that look really beautiful. And I didn't really know that much about what it meant. So I guess that's how you learn.
What variety do you have that's your favorite?
Well, I got some distant drums, like you mentioned last year, I got 3 of them, which is a lot for me. I have a really small space. But those ones have done so well already. I think I planted them last spring, and then this year they each have so many stems coming up. And so I really like that because they're so hardy and the stems are so long. And then I have James Galway, I think, and Crown Princess Margarita. And I think I might've selected a site for them that's not the best, but the James Galway is doing pretty well, but the Crown Princess I think is getting a little too much water where it's at, so I don't know.
Well, I have Princess Margarita, and I've had her in the ground for like 5 years and she's still very sad. Like, it must be that rose, like it's in the same spot next to this amazing rose. So I'm like, okay, what am I doing wrong with this rose? And I don't think it's me. I think it's the rose.
Okay. It might take a little longer to get going.
Or it's just not as strong as they say she is. She's supposed to be a climber and she's really not climbing. But yeah, distant drums, when people say like, is it worth growing or what rose should I start with? I'm like, distant drums is a producer. Like that thing is so strong and gets so tall and it makes beautiful straight upright stems. Spiky as all hell, but like really
so spiky.
But it's the most popular rose for a reason.
Yeah.
People say like, should I buy it? They ask me a lot, like on advice, and they go like, is it worth it? It's so popular. Like, I'm like, yes, it's popular for a reason. It's freaking beautiful. You can't stop staring at it. It smells like orange wine, like a funky orange wine. And it makes so many beautiful, like so many stems every year. It's bigger and bigger.
I love how it like evolves too from like when it's closed up, it looks like it's going to be a red rose. Mm-hmm. And so no one would guess what it's going to open into. And then it just kind of fades into these weird tan purples. I love it so much. So distant drums must be a favorite for growing. And then mm-hmm. what about like, do you have a few other favorites that you love either for ease of growth or something that you love to design with?
I love Queen of Sweden. That's the one a lot of people might see me posting about. It's that pink rose.
Yes.
It's like the perfect little cupped, you know, and it's a smaller bloom. It's more like a sweetheart rose. So it's not like a giant, but it's, I would say, call it like a medium, small, medium size bloom. But the very similar to distant drums in terms of like how upright it grows, very straight stems, almost thornless, which is awesome.
Wow.
Which is, you know, a great reason to grow a rose if you're doing, you know, for cutting and stuff. And her shape is so sweet. So, and she smells like strawberries. So I love that. Honey Dijon is a really great rose, very popular color, but also a great, great producer.
And I saw that you just posted, you did like wrapped bouquets of roses. Those look beautiful. What stage do you cut roses for something like a bouquet? And is that different than what you would cut it at for designing?
If I'm going to put some bouquet or bouquets together with some roses, like say I'm taking them to the coffee shop to be sold, I put the roses pretty closed
okay.
in there because they might sit there for a few days before they're sold. So then they have time to open up. And also if I'm cutting for a designer for their wedding, I like to know when their wedding is. So I have in my mind, like all the information I need to know, like for when this variety of rose, like how fast it opens, right? So like I'll cut like a distant drums, not too tight, but because sometimes if you cut too tight, they're not going to open right, or they're not going to open fast enough. So I cut just when it's starting to like unfurl, and then I put it in the cooler and then sell it, knowing that it'll open up really lovely in a day or so. So like the rose world is difficult because especially small growers, like you'll talk to any small rose grower here, and we put a lot of work and energy into making sure they're cut the right way at the right time for our clients so that they have beautiful roses for the wedding. Because the saddest thing is if you buy roses and they fall apart before your wedding. I've done that. I've bought roses from other people and they were harvested way too late.
Yeah.
And even with the cooler, like they're shattering on wedding day, and that's heartbreaking. So we just try really hard to harvest at the right time. And, and each rose is different with how it opens and how long it lasts. So
it sounds like most roses you want to cut when it's unfurling a little bit rather than when it's a super tight bud. And then it's going to depend on the variety in terms of like how long it'll last from that point and how long it'll take to open.
Totally. And there's a few roses that like will look almost fully open and they'll still they'll last quite a while. So you have a little more leeway in when you cut those roses.
Yeah. Well, I already have a really long list that I've been writing down since we've been on this, on this call. I'm like, oh, new shopping list.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn you into a rose grower. You're going to just buy roses. So many roses.
Just add them to every space I can. Well, I'm doing something similar, just trying to have more space with perennials in them. Like last year, every bed I had was an annual bed. And then over the fall and winter, I've just changed about half of them over to more perennial beds, but they're kind of empty right now because it takes a long time to fill out. Yeah. So roses are definitely something I'm looking to buy more of. Yes. And you're convincing me. Yeah. And so for growing roses, what do you use to support? I mean, there's several different forms of roses and how do you kind of support them in the garden?
Mm-hmm. So most of the roses we grow for like cuts, they're like shrub roses or floor bundles, okay. hybrid teas, things that don't need support. But I do have several varieties that I cut from that are mini, like either a mini climber or can be grown as a climber. So I have a fence that I built this little fence that goes around my front yard. So I have a lot of David Austin roses that are growing on that fence.
Ooh, beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a lower fence. And when I said earlier how a rose could be trained as a climber, a lot of David Austin roses can be trained as climbers opposed to shrub roses, which is really cool. Because roses send out these sometimes these really, really tall canes.
Okay.
And like, I don't know, you have some David Austin roses, so you've probably seen like a big tall, you have a shrub rose and all of a sudden there's this really tall cane, and you can take that cane and you can bend it
Ooh.
horizontally, tie it into your fence, and any horizontal growth, and this goes with like fruit trees, it's all very similar. The horizontal growth will then shoot out along every like a leaf connection will shoot out stems. So that's another way to increase the number of flowering stems you get on a rose bush and train it as like a little climber. So I have that little fence that I do, and in the backyard I have some rambling roses that I built like wood like lattice frame on the side of my house that the roses are climbing. And then I have another climbing rose that's just I'm just letting it climb over my garage, which is cute.
Love that.
Yeah, it's just going crazy. It's called New Dawn. It's not a great cut rose, but it's a sweet. It's an amazing. It's like it gets like 20 plus feet.
Wow.
So I planted it there, knowing that I wanted something to grow over the garage, and it's definitely doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for when you're planting a rose for kind of what to do, what to look for when you receive maybe a bare root in the mail?
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's like a whole thing you do, and also there's a YouTube video I put out there for all you
We'll
people.
link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, I started a YouTube channel last year. I'm like, I'm gonna make YouTube videos, but then I just made three and never made any more. But there is one on planting bare root roses, and there's one on pruning roses.
Okay.
Planting a bare root, you know, you're gonna get it in the mail, and it's important that you right away, you unpack it and you soak the whole thing in water overnight or for like 24 hours or something, just to get those roots rehydrated. Because it's important that they don't dry out. Oh,
Yeah.
that's like the death to a root is dry. So you just soak it and then you dig your hole and then you know, you prune any broken stems, any broken roots. I also will prune the rose down a couple inches too. Like if, you know,
Okay.
usually they're already pretty short, but I give them a fresh cut on all of the stems. Like above, like a bud eye or something like that. And then I don't fertilize first year roses. I don't put any fertilizer in the hole. I just put like some mycorrhizal fungi, which helps the root growth. And the, you know, all the things in the soil. So I just use that and give it a lot of water and, you know, baby it for a little while.
Love it. And I think a lot of things, something that really intimidates people about roses is disease. And I was wondering if you've dealt with any like rose diseases and how you handle those.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Especially this year because it's been so wet and muggy, like black spot is like pretty bad. So and everyone's messaging like I have black spot. I'm like, me too, me too. It's
It's
okay. It
normal.
doesn't mean you're a bad rose grower. Like normally every year we have a little black spot. Just depends on the variety of rose because certain roses are more disease resistant. And then I didn't used to spray for black spot like organic sprays because it was never that bad. I just like would just deal with it. But this year, it's some of my roses are completely defoliating. Like I have a climbing rose in the front and like half the, you know, up to about 6 feet, all the leaves have fallen off because of black spot. So with that, it helps to spray some organic stuff. Like you can spray neem oil, which is supposed to help. I've been spraying this thing called 3-in-1 Bee Safe. I think it's called Bee Safe. And it's just like this organic pollinator friendly spray that's supposed to help with like fungal diseases and aphids and things like that. I sprayed it a few times earlier in the season. As we go like farther into the season, I start to really fall off my spray schedule because I get busy.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're on your own, roses, do your thing. I'm a pretty like hands-off mom, you know, like, so there's black spot. And then one of the worst things that I think happens to roses is thrips. And that's this little, like very tiny, tiny little bug that gets on your roses and can get on like other plants too, like dahlias and stuff. Doesn't really hurt dahlias, but with roses, it makes your buds like malformed and bloom weird. And like last year was the first year I had it. And I didn't know that I had them until I was like, what is happening? Like all my honey Dijons looked so bad. And I found out it was thrips. So I had to like battle that for a little while. This year I released some beneficial insects that are really good at eating thrips. And I think they're helping a little bit. So, I mean, anytime you grow a lot of roses in the same spot, you're going to get pests, you're going to get disease. And it's just a matter of like how you treat those in a mindful way. And so, you know, we don't spray like crazy chemicals or anything like that. So, yeah. So I would say if anyone's like concerned, I think you should just do research and plant highly disease resistant varieties.
Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. And we've been talking a lot on the podcast about Dahlia virus. So I'm like thinking a lot more consciously now when I take my snips between plants. And do you know if any diseases spread between roses that way? Like, do you disinfect at all between?
Yeah, they do. They do spread. Okay. So we kind of like dip our clippers into like this little bleach solution. Like
okay.
Jar of like watered down bleach.
Boop. Hi guys, it's Sarah here cutting in because at this point in the conversation, I went on a really big sidetrack where we started talking about pests spreading disease. And then I was telling her about the bunnies in Seattle and the rats in Seattle. And she was telling me about deer at her plot. And so we just got on a big side tangent about pests, but I wanted to drop you into the next part, which I found really interesting about how she grows a lot of her tulips in crates, in part in response to moles and voles that are pests in her area. So I'm going to just drop you right into there, but wanted to let you know how we got from here to there.
Or voles, like voles and moles will go and tunnel and eat your tulip bulbs.
It's always something.
Yeah, that's why we started this year growing all of our tulips in crates, and that has been awesome.
And so did you do that both in your tunnel and on the driveway? They were all in crates. Yeah. And then does that help too because the beds are kind of ready underneath and you're not having to pull from the ground?
Oh, totally. And it's fluffy. Like the thing about tulips is there's a lot of disease in tulips. So yeah. When we, for years and years, as when I planted in beds, like in the ground, there was always tulip fire, and tulip fire would just go rampant through all the tulips and ruin everything. And there's already not a lot of money in tulips. There's not a lot of profit. So every bulb counts. So with crates, one, you're bringing in new soil every year and it doesn't have disease in it. And it's fluffy and every single tulip comes out with the bulb on. Opposed to like if you're growing in the field, a lot of them snap, a lot of them don't come up with the bulb. So you can't store it as long. So then with the crates, you can do that. And if there is disease, it is in that, it's not going to spread because it's in a crate and it's not going to spread from crate to crate. And then after the season's done, you can take that compost and go dump it somewhere else on the farm or put it in another, you know, on a bed somewhere that you aren't going to plant tulips in the next year. So,
yeah. Oh, that's really smart. Sounds like a good solution, especially for disease. Mm-hmm. And so just with the last few minutes, it's crazy because you grow flowers and your floral design is just insane.
Thank you.
I wanted to know a little bit about like how you started designing and, like what you use as a starting point when you are designing.
Yeah. When I first started, I didn't really know. It takes a while for you to like find out who you are as a designer and find your niche and what makes you you. And for me, it's so garden inspired. My favorite thing is to like go out, not really have in mind like what color palette I'm using. I just go cut what is beautiful right then and right there and bring it into the garage and make something that is intuitive and, you know, it just responds to the garden and what's blooming right then. And that's why my designs are like very garden looking, I think, you know, there's a lot of movement because that's what gardens are. There's movement. So you can tell the difference between like designing with like local garden treasures opposed to designing with like shipped in product that have straight stiff stems. You can't design a beautiful, like whimsical moving arrangement if you're using like stock and, you know, all those kind of like shipped in flowers that are
like straight up and down. Yeah. And
tall, you know, cause that's what the flower industry wants. They want tall, straight stems. And that just doesn't work for this kind of design, you know, for that kind of organic garden inspired design. So that's why we love a curly stem. We
yes.
like weird, freaky, accidental, you know, blooms. We like things that are special and have a little wiggle, you know. Yeah,
definitely. Do you have favorite color palettes either for when you're, you know, planning your garden for what you want to center a color palette around, or for when you're going out to cut and you're the most excited by?
I just plant what I love, like the colors yeah. that I love. I love pinks. I love apricots. I love pops of red. You know, I'm not a purple fan, but it's hard to stay away from purple in the garden world because so many beautiful things are purple,
mm-hmm.
which is great. I love lavender and stuff like that. It's just, so my designs, and then so sometimes I do, I'm like, I'll think of a color palette. Like, oh, I want to do like pinks today, or I want to do mm-hmm. just roses, like doing a mono, like variety Ooh. Arrangement, which is really fun, you know? So I guess it's just, it really just what I plant is kind of what I design with. So my arrangements look like my garden.
Yeah. Like feeds off each yeah. other. And if any listeners are gardeners, but they just don't really know where to start with like designing the flowers that they grow, making an arrangement. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips you could recommend for them of how to get started doing that?
Yeah, I would say grow a myriad of things. You want some focal flowers, right? Like roses or dahlias or peonies, something that is large, but then you're going to want to grow some more whimsical things like Japanese anemones, you know, the chocolate cosmos, nepeta, which is catmint, anything that's like frilly or you know, it's fun to grow grasses, you know, because grasses for texture. You want a good mix of texture, focal flowers, and special treasures. So like, you know, that kind of stuff. I'd say to them, if you don't already grow a rose, and you might be intimidated. You might not think you don't like roses, but I bet you $1 billion once you grow that rose, you're going to love it. And it's going to really change your designs because it's going to elevate them. If you're only growing sunflowers and zinnias, your designs are sure. There are some really, really talented designers who could make any flower look awesome. But if you're only growing zinnias and sunflowers, it's going to be hard to have an elevated design that feels thoughtful and poetic. So I would say grow those cottage garden flowers, grow the roses, grow vines, grow anything that's like textural and fun and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining today. And could you share with listeners where they can find you if they're not already on your website and your Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah. You can find me at Small Yard Flowers at Instagram, and my website, smallyardflowers.com, which I just got redesigned. It's a new website. So check that out. It's very
pretty. Looks gorgeous.
Thank you. My friend did it for me. Where else can you find me? I think that's it. That's the only social media that I
have. I feel like Instagram's kind of the spot for.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It was great chatting with you. And sometime when I'm down in Portland, would love to stop by and see your roses.
Yes, please come. Please come.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Love chatting with Ariel, and I don't know how you guys feel, but I just felt so calm talking to her. She has a really soothing voice, and I just left the conversation and then re-listening to that while I was editing, just feeling really calm and relaxed. And I hope that that is how you're going to start your week listening to this podcast as well. So, and I really recommend going to check out Ariel's website, Small Yard Flowers. It's designed so beautifully, and she has these gorgeous arrangements with these cool backdrops, and it just looks like something out of a painting. You can really see the garden inspiration, the movement, the texture. So very inspiring on both the gardening and the design fronts. Okay, now for the flower fact of the week. I was looking up, I was trying to figure out which state sold the most cut flowers in the US. And I wasn't able to get exactly there because people are combining a lot of different types of flowers when you try to look that up. I think California still might be the actual biggest cut flower producer. But the question that I had for you guys was about floriculture. So I'm getting this answer from the May 2022 USDA report about 2021 floriculture crops. And this says that the National Agricultural Statistics Service, which is part of USDA, conducted the survey among operations that annually produce and sell at least 10,000 of fresh cut flowers, potted flowering plants, foliage plants, annual bedding and garden plants, potted herbaceous perennials, cut cultivated florist greens, and propagative unfinished floriculture material. Annual sales include retail and wholesale of items surveyed. So in third place was Michigan with $635 million annually, California with $962 million in 2021, and then Florida with $1.115 billion in 2021. And other states on the top 10 list were New Jersey, Ohio, Texas, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New York, and Connecticut. So if you guessed Florida, you were correct. And if you guessed California, you're a close second. And that was in terms of total floriculture. I think the answer might still be California if you're just talking about cut flowers, but need to find someone who can verify that. And I just want to provide flower facts that I have some actual literature to reference. So if anyone has that on the actual only cut flower portion, please let me know. Before we get to the song of the week, I wanted to make a couple quick notes. First of all, we have a new Spotify playlist of the song of the weeks from Flower Friends. So you can go look on Spotify for the Flower Friends song of the week playlist. If you'd like to listen along to all of the songs that we've had on every episode, it's a great mix for being out in the garden or just hanging out. I don't know, put it on as dinner music, something like that. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is that if you're loving this podcast, I would really appreciate it if you could go rate and review it on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. It really helps get more listeners. It helps me get different guests on if there's more volume of people listening to the podcast. And so that's a great way to really help support if you can. Another way that you can support is by following on Instagram. And the great part about that, if you follow at Flower Friends Podcast, is that you can see who the guests are each week. And then a lot of times I'll reference different photos or different things that that guest has done, and I'll post those photos right onto Flower Friends. And another thing is I've been trying to get listener questions before interviews. And so that's another way that you can be more interactive. If you want to ask questions about the podcast, you can message me. If you want to ask listener questions to upcoming guests, you can do that usually through stories. I'll post like a questions portal so you can add your question on there and I try to ask them, and I'll often even reference who asked the questions so you can listen along and hopefully hear your question answered. The song of the week this week is Love on the Brain by none other than Queen Rihanna. Hope you have a good one, and we'll catch you next week with none other than Leanne Huber from Cozy Town Flowers. We're going to chat about dahlias, so stay tuned for next week. Baby, you got me like I, I, don't stop loving me, don't quit loving me, just start loving me.